Hey, we're back.
I remember this kind of thing.
It's been a minute.
It's been, how long has it been?
Yeah,
like
I was
going to
say.
Test.
If we were gonna simulate it the right way, after you said hey and then nobody said anything, we should not have said anything for like 2 months. Because it's been a while.
It has.
So, yeah.
How many months has it been?
It's been a couple of months. Like, well, then there's the holidays. So, I mean, it's been like 9 months.
Yeah,
I'm not really great at math.
But I do have a couple of friends that like listen to this show, and they're like, when are you guys putting up new stuff? And I was like, I don't know.
Well, then, we didn't know.
Yeah.
There were machinations behind the scenes that precluded us.
And then, like, surprise.
Well, yeah. and we'll get into why we have been on hiatus.
Yes, we will. Right. In fact, let's get
the
into
important
that.
Thing is we're back.
We yes,
back.
That is the important thing. So, well, let's go ahead and get into it, and we will tell the story. I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Kevin.
I'm Mark.
Somebody likes it.
So I have been, while we've been on hiatus, I've been laboring under the misapprehension that your office was broken into. And of course it was.
Yes.
But I didn't realize that really the primary thing that was stolen was our gear.
Yeah, let me tell you about it.
Okay.
Somebody threw a brick through one of the windows at my office.
Which is where we record.
Where we were,
normally,
were recording.
Yeah. Normally.
Yeah.
We're not
where
tonight.
We normally record. And this was on... actually, it was on Halloween when this happened. Yes.
It's a night of mischief and mayhem.
Yeah.
Yes.
Devil's
Night. We got a trick that night, Ryan.
We did.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys went straight to my desk, opened up the case that we keep all of the audio gear in, and took all of that gear out and stole it.
Did they leave the case?
They left the case. They closed the case back up
and
put it back under my desk.
You think it was a punk band?
Oh, they dust it for prints and stuff?
A punk band?
Well, they did dust for prints.
If they just, you know, went straight for the audio gear and didn't give a shit about anything else. I literally was friends with a punk band that used to, like, go, like, play shows that they weren't booked on. They would just load in and, like, set up.
Well, it was definitely a bunch of punks.
Different situation.
I mean, that's not as nefarious.
So you posited, and I was under the same impression as Kevin. I thought that it was just a general break-in. I had no idea until we got here tonight that it was just our equipment. But, I mean, I wonder, like, so have they didn't catch the guys, or did they?
No.
So there was DNA evidence, blood evidence.
Yeah,
they bled all over the place.
They bled all over the place.
Yeah.
Well, all in all, it's a
anyway,
pretty
bizarre
story.
So
if you're out there
story.
And you took our shit, screw you.
Yeah, fuck you.
Yeah, give it right. back,
yeah,
dudes.
Right.
We weren't able to do a podcast for a long time because this shit costs money.
But good news is we have we've got gear now.
Yeah.
And we're back and we're never leaving. So
it'll be like that John Belushi sketch, like the thing
neighbor
that
wouldn't
leave.
Yeah. You got
the
any more
thing
records
that wouldn't leave.
Pizza?
Yes.
Yeah. That's so true. So one of the things that we talked about during our extended hiatus was the idea that when we came back, because we had talked about, there was an episode that we had teed up that we were going to do next, and instead of just picking up where we left off,
but
several,
I think
like,
what we came up with is your idea, right?
Yeah, I'm getting to that. So anyway, yeah. So the point is,
love you, bro.
Thanks, Rye.
Yeah.
Any more punchlines you want to step on? So yeah. So but anyway, the gist is what I suggested was something that's been rattling around in my brain for a while. We don't do these mixtape shows. We want the mixtape shows to be special, so we don't do them all the time. But I thought when we came back, maybe this would be a good time for us to do a soundtrack show. So tonight's episode will be a mixtape show that is based on tracks that have been like part of a movie soundtrack. And so this is it occurred to me today that if this goes well or horribly, that this should be volume one of the soundtrack.
Oh, I have so many more.
And
that's what I mean, right?
Like, it's just original scores, right?
Yes. Yeah. No, just...
we could have, like, just, Vangelis.
Yeah,
like,
interstitial movies, music.
It's, the theme to Chariots of Fire.
Yeah, yeah, what I want is actually just the dialogue that ends up on the record from the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, but...
good, because that's what I got.
Good, perfect. They're like, can you hold that door open, please? Anyway, yeah, so we're... this is our special... Somebody Likes It gets a soundtrack mixtape episode.
I think it's a fun way
to... It's our soundtrack soirée.
It is a soundtrack soirée. Sorry, Shane.
Soundtrack segueing back into the show.
Yeah.
It's a fun way to...
Finding our sea legs again.
Yeah.
Sure.
Why don't we... Shane, do you want to start us off tonight and pick one? Like, so usually you want to talk about how the rules on these are usually pretty static. So if you've listened to the show before, you probably will know how this works. But Shane, you want to be our spokesmodel?
Right. So we're going to have four rounds. Each one of us picked a song from a different soundtrack. We will announce it, discuss it briefly. Then we'll watch the video in house and come back and discuss the video. If there is one.
Yeah.
I know that one of mine doesn't have a video, unfortunately. But I think there's a fan video for it that I found. So, anyway, yeah.
Why don't you kick us off?
Okay. Well, I think that the 80s and 90s were the most fertile ground for movie soundtracks.
I am with you on that.
Personally.
Sure.
And by the way, this is another thing. It hasn't happened yet, but there's a very good chance at some point it will, May tonight, that if somebody... You guys all have alternates, right?
Yeah, I've got a couple.
Yeah, okay.
I've got a stack.
Okay, well, I consider this to be probably the greatest soundtrack song of the 80s, and I don't know why I put probably in there. So
I so hope you're not picking something.
I bet he is, and there's one film in particular that I'd be shocked if at least three of us hasn't considered. We'll talk about that later.
But I get
somebody gets to go first.
Yeah, I got to start. I got to start it, so that's why I said I hope you guys have alternates. Anyway, Sly Stallone.
Okay.
Eye of the Tiger. So let's...
Survivor.
Survivor.
I know, but I'm saying Sly Stallone, anybody? Oh, yes, right. Survivor.
Yeah.
Eye of the Tiger.
I did not pick that one, but
I was...
It would
not be a good song, but Sly.
A co-worker was literally singing that like 2 days ago when I was at work.
We'll watch the video. I rewatched and listened, and it holds up as a ridiculous song, but that riff... It's truly one of the best riffs.
If it gets in your head, it's not going anywhere.
All you need, if you sing it in the right way, all you need is one note.
And it's from... Boom.
And everybody knows what it is.
And it's from Rocky III, right?
Yes. Yeah, right. That's with Clubber Lang.
Yeah, Mr. T. Yeah.
The man that was born a decade too late. Can you... Well, let's just watch
Let's just get into it.
All right. We'll so this is a Survivor, Eye of the Tiger.
Oh man,
solid gold.
Yeah, that's classic.
Well, the song, just the riff. Like I said before, all you need is like the boom. That's all you need to do. Boom, boom, boom.
It's the easiest name that tune.
So I mentioned that people were singing at work the other day. It was two 19-year-old girls who weren't anywhere near alive when this shit came out. You know how they know it from? Guitar Hero, and that's got to be level one.
Oh sure, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's not whatever. There's no Eddie Van Halen in there.
No, there's no.
Can we talk about that video?
Tapping.
Holy shit! That video, that set. I like the massive black trash bag they had.
Well, okay, so it starts out like they're walking like poorly made determined robots.
Yeah. Just like they're on a mission.
Yes, and they all come together like it's just the singer, and then two guys come and flank him. and then two guys come and flank. So they're
and you're like, oh yeah, shit's going down.
Yeah, and then they go into like a warehouse with a lot of bathtubs in it and stuff. They go upstairs and they're
a
and
giant hefty bag.
I see. No. First, see, this is the thing. I'm assuming this is an allusion to the Eye of the Tiger, like they had the Eye of the Tiger. So first they're playing in this little cramped warehouse, and then things change a little bit, like some cutting edge video effects come.
Oh,
and
yeah, the vertical swipe?
Yeah, and then the next thing you know, they're in a much larger room with like a bunch of like hefty steel sacks behind them.
Yeah,
like
some gold lame blowing in the breeze behind them.
Yeah, so that's basically, I'm assuming that's just alluding to, if you have the Eye of the Tiger, you can take it from the bathtub warehouse to
a
slightly larger stage with hefty bags.
Yeah.
And, well, a very sweaty drummer.
Did you notice
was much more wet than anybody else.
Well, see, but that's the thing. Like, in 80s videos, the drummer's always wet.
They're moist.
Usually it's raining.
Yeah.
But here he's making his own wet.
They're moist, or the snare
moist.
Has milk on it for some reason.
Yeah.
And anyway, yeah. Like, solid pick, Shane.
So they always put the drums in the dairy aisle.
Yeah, so brother, I was worried you were gonna pick something. I guess I'm going next. We'll just do this clockwise.
Sure. We'll go right
sure. I was worried you were gonna pick something from Pretty in Pink, which is what I have done.
I was pretty sure you were going to. I almost did.
Yeah, by the way, that whole soundtrack is pretty great.
Also Pink, whatever. But yeah, sure.
Anyhow. But I wanted to pick songs for this show that I know from soundtracks rather than like it happens to be on a soundtrack, but it was also a giant hit and like I heard it on the radio first or whatever, but like specifically songs that like I know from the movie or the soundtrack. So this one's going to be, Bring on the Dancing Horses by Echo and the Bunnymen.
And
Echo and the Bunnymen is one of those bands that I need to go back and just listen to all their shit because I've never heard a song I didn't like.
I feel like this. Oh well, I don't know. I almost picked Please, Please, Please Let Me Get What I Want just
to piss off Kevin.
For Kevin.
No,
well, at least we mentioned him.
It's been
no. That's why I did it right now. I was gonna. I said, well, I'll just like.
And that actually, and I thought about that too because that actually is how I know that song first, like from that cassette tape. But anyway, like, Bring on the Dancing Horses was recorded specifically for this movie, by Echo and the Money Bin. So let's dial it up.
Let's do it.
Welcome to Dada.
Production value.
Man.
Well, but you have to admit, I mean, look at, like, that was what, like 4, maybe 5 years after the Survivor video? The production values had gone way.
It is much higher production value.
Surreal.
Not a lot of it's logic. A lot of cows.
It does totally sound like
a lot of
John
cows
Hughes
that sounded like track. Horses.
Yeah. It's a beautiful song. I think we can all agree on that. It's
it was a pretty great video, I thought.
Yeah, the great video was amazing. But like, I just wondered what like the treatment meeting was like. You know, all right, stay with me. You know, we're gonna have a cow. What does it? What did it say, like love on it or something? Like,
and then there was like fish. Horse.
Fish.
And
yeah.
Then there was a silhouette of a fish in front of, they were leading, Ian McCullough was leading this cow. Okay, so it's like Bring on the Dancing Horses. And then the video starts out with like this sort of play on the old MGM logo with the lion that roars, and except it's a cow, like a real live cow, and then it's a horse whinny instead of the roars. And then he's like leading this cow in silhouette. It's across a something stage.
Most of it happens in silhouette. My favorite part of that video, and there were lots, but my favorite part had to be when there's the silhouette of one effete British band member on the front end and another effete British band member on the back end trying to get that cow to move. And I was like, you guys are not even trying. And even if you were, it would not matter.
Yeah, they're probably not. Their upbringing probably wasn't leading them.
They were too
pushing and pulling cows.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's not what, you know, that's not why we listen to Echo and the Bunnymen for their cow pushing skills.
No. And let's be honest. If you push the cow too well, it really takes away from the song. So,
well, yeah, and also, what if somebody likes in the cow pushing industry had like seen that and then
cow
tried
pushing
and
industry.
Tried to recruit them, yeah. And then it broke up the band.
That's early ESPN.
Oh, it was like Australian rules football and cow pushing.
Right, exactly.
It could have been.
Hard. How long did it take to ruin the show when you got back? I don't
you know
like
that there,
7
there's
minutes.
There's some guy like in the south of England in some small village trying to get that sport off of the ground, and we never heard of him.
Or at least move it forward.
So it's good stuff.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah.
Missed those dad jokes.
Well, stick around. What do you got, Mark?
So the first time I ever really fell in love with a soundtrack to a movie was for the film Valley Girl with Nicolas Cage. Oh, my God. and the song
of
by
the Moon Unit Zappa.
Gag me with a spoon.
The song by Modern English, I Melt With You.
That's a great one. That's
yeah,
a great
I
one.
Thought so. Basically, they've got the front man, and then pretty much the rest of the band doesn't really like to be on camera.
Yeah.
Like yeah,
that's true.
They seem extremely uncomfortable anytime the camera's on them.
Right.
This is also, again, like in the really early, when did this song come out? Like 82?
83, maybe?
83, yeah. Like, I mean, really early ages of like MTV videos and stuff. So like bands were not at all used to it. You know who, though, where the whole band was into it? Journey Separate Ways. And that
they,
is
they were very into
that,
it.
That is the same period of time. All of those motherfuckers were into that video.
Carry keyboards.
Can I say one thing real quick? Boy, if you're gonna be a one hit wonder, that's the song you want to be.
That's
into.
A really good song.
It's
a
great it's not just a great song, it's still played in commercials. All those guys are living off of the proceeds of that song still.
Well, the other thing that occurred to me is like that I think that song's been in several movies. Like it may be on.
Oh, sure.
I'd be curious to like whatever the hit count is of like how many soundtracks that.
Yeah,
particular
I can look that I'm up sure. I'm sure it's.
So you
been
said it's Modern
soundtrack.
English. I always get them confused with Simple Minds. They were like,
"Don't sure. you?"
Yeah, didn't you open for one of them at some point?
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway,
Shane's old band Kling opened for somebody famous once.
Yeah. Anyway, the point. Yeah, the
couple
point
times
is,
actually.
I think.
Oh no! It was Modern English.
Was it was Modern English?
It was Modern English. Yeah, it was at the back room.
You opened
yeah,
for Modern
okay,
English?
Yeah,
I did, but it wasn't like there was only one or two guys from the original band. Yeah, it was We did. We
and
it was
made,
like
yeah, I
it
knew
was like on Halloween or dude,
remember
I
this were they, and they were making jokes about how they had one song.
Yeah, dude, the guy had a really great sense of humor about it. It was the same singer, and he was making jokes about how like, yeah, about how they only had that one good song.
Were they moderner then? Like
I remember zero about that show. Was that the night that it was like Halloween?
I don't. I was. I think I was in Indiana. I think our friend Steve set it up through KNAC.
Possible. I don't know. We played a show there once. We played like a few shows there. They always went over great. It was a fucking metal club, but like
yeah, but every now and then I saw Toad the Wet Sprocket there.
Yeah, they would like
they would have these touring acts come through weren't anything like their normal bills.
And then people like would try to have like you know alternative bands in there and stuff. Yeah, we always did really well there. I mean, they did for a while too. But one year like we played in like Halloween costuming. This is a part of my life that I completely had forgotten.
I have just reclaimed that part of your brain
Thank
for you.
So, yeah. Kevin, it looks like the only soundtrack that this original version was in was Valley Girl.
Well, they did a second version of it off an album a few years later.
It's also been in TV adverts for Burger King, M&M's, Ritz Crackers, and Hershey's.
I'm sure there's I would be surprised.
Jason Mraz did a cover of it for the film 50 First Dates.
Here's what I want. Well, let me put this way.
They made some money off the song.
Yeah. I do think that they banked off of it. But beyond that, like, I think that it's at least plausible that even if it didn't show up on 100 other soundtracks, it's in a bunch of other movies. Like, that song is omnipresent to this day.
That's what I completely believe that. Yeah. It's also, like, I wonder, like, what the situation is with, like, royalties for karaoke songs. I have no idea. But, boy, that if you do get royalties off that stuff...
Sure.
There's a lot of that shit involved, too.
Yeah. No, it's just hush money.
Didn't you watch Britt Daniel of Spoon, like, sing his own songs on karaoke?
Yes.
So
yeah, I cornered him, and we talked about it. And he said that he was... And I've told this story on the show before. I'll tell this very short version of it, which is that I ran into him a week after seeing him do one of his own songs on karaoke at a local bar here, Britt Daniel from Spoon.
It was Nomad. He did it at Nomad.
That's right, yeah. And then the next week was right as Rainy Street was opening up and becoming a commercial venue on the downtown here in Austin. And anyway, I was there on a Monday night, a little more drunk than usual, and who should walk in but the lead singer Spoon and walks right up. There's nobody at the bar. And I was like, hey, man. And I bought him a beer, and we talked about it for a second, and I was like, you sang one of your own songs last week, and you looked at the words, like, really close. I was like, didn't you write that song? And he thought that was really funny. And then he told me that he was looking at it real close to see if they got it right. And I was like, that's bullshit. So,
But anyway. Because he wasn't looking at the whole song. He was just looking at certain parts of it.
But possibly he made, like, half a penny.
Those are total bootleg. He could have probably sued them. I'm sure they don't pay any because they have their own bands record them.
Oh yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah, it's a shell game. Anyway, he was funny about it.
Kevin, your turn.
Yeah. So to the point that was made at the top of the show about the '80s being a great decade for movie soundtracks. Totally true.
As we have so far proven.
Yeah, so I'm going to cap the round with yet another one. And this is a track from 24 Hour Party People, which I thought that somebody else would probably bring to the table.
Well, it's not an 80s movie, but it's about the 80s.
It's a movie about the 80s, right.
I just heard that song for the very first time the other day on the radio, like 3 days ago.
Well, this is not that song. We're going to do, because really, like, and that movie spans, like, really starts with Joy Division and New Order.
Yeah,
but late
70s.
But it's
about the 80s.
It's really mostly about the Manchester scene. And so I figure, I did watch the video for the Happy Mondays track, Loose Fit, and it's got a lot of Bez in it, so that's what we're going to watch.
Nice.
Thanks.
one of the things about that song in particular, well, two things. One is that the version that's in the official video has like some extra preamble on tacked onto the front end of it that's different than on
the album version.
The album version. Yeah. And the other thing is that was like, it occurred to me while we were watching it here in Mark's living room next to a fireplace. It's very cozy in here, by the way. That it occurred to me that it was like, that's the kind of track that it's sort of best to listen to with a like pumped into a really like a little a mildly overbearing stereo, like, and that's
yeah. I did feel that the sound was a little inadequate.
It's a little muted
or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, and the video was real gauzy. Like, you probably need to be on the drug that they're known for
right.
to really enjoy it to its full potential.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were like ecstasy dealers, I think. At least a couple of them were at the Hacienda.
I remember reading an interview the first time for the Happy Monies were going to tour America, and the interviewer asked Sean Ryder, what are you looking forward to most when you get to America? And he's like, all the new drugs we haven't tried yet.
Yeah.
They were not shying away from the recreational
that
pharmaceuticals.
That is a damn good record, though.
It is.
I love that record, actually. Yeah. That's not one of the better songs on it, actually.
I love that
like,
song.
Like, it's decent, but, like, there, I can name you three or four more that I like better.
Bez's
real name is Mark Berry. Bez is what he goes by, and technically, I guess, he's listed on his Wikipedia page as like a maracas player and a dancer and a comedian.
He doesn't really do anything
in
the band.
Yeah.
He's like a hype man, except he doesn't do anything except dance and play maracas.
Yeah, like a British hype man. So
yeah,
he's
sort
just
of.
Like
yeah, I mean, yeah, he's British.
He's
I have a weird story about that. Kevin, remember when I went down to South by Southwest? I was living in Indiana, but I went down to South by Southwest, and you had a music-related website, and I interviewed Anton Newcomb from Brian Jonestown Massacre.
Yeah.
And he had a guy that was just like on stage all through the set that was just like playing a little bit of tambourine.
It's the same thing. Yeah, it's
every now and then. And I said, like, so you kind of have a Bez in your band. And he was like, don't tell him that.
Yeah.
He was like, no, he thinks he's important.
No, that's great. And the fact that he got the references, that makes me like those.
No,
guys.
He knew
yeah.
who it was. Yeah.
Yeah, he's all over whatever that movie was. Great. Oh, a great, great movie about, you know. Them and the Dandy Warhols.
Oh, what was it? Was it Hype? Or no, that's the other
it's
one.
It's one word.
It's called Dig.
Dig, yeah.
Dig.
Yeah, yeah. Great
yes.
movie.
Yeah, anyway, but this is 24-Hour Party People. That was Happy Monday's Loose Fit. And now we've been through one round. Shane, what do you got next for us?
Okay. Well, I got so inspired by Eye of the Tiger that I thought of what is... And the unfortunate thing is I couldn't find a good video for this, but maybe we'll be able to parse one out here. But this is a classic song, same period of time, maybe a year later, by a different sort of movie with the template of the Rocky movie, The Underdog Fighter, and that's Karate Kid. And I like to play the song You're the Best Around by Joe...
Oh, the montage song.
Bean Esposito, which... That's his nickname, Bean. So, anyway, there's the montage in it.
That song's like created for montages.
Yes, but see the one that they well, whatever. We'll find it in a minute. We'll at least listen to the song and come back. But You're the Best Around is almost the best around of songs.
Almost
from the it's no Eye of the Tiger, but it's pretty damn good. All right, let's listen to it.
Try to be best, cause you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you gotta hang tough to make it. History repeats itself, try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one, and you can have your dream. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. And nothing's gonna ever keep you down. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down.
quintessential 80s motherfucking song.
It's so good.
Do we have a sense of like where you stand? Are you the best? Are you like somewhere in there?
He's and around
like,
the best.
Me?
Do we know like how long you're going to be the best? Is it like fleeting or is it going to be?
Every person that hears that song should hear it the way that it's sung. You are the best.
Oh, yeah.
Mark, you are the best. Ryan, you are the we're. It's like you're the best around.
Yeah, I'm the Hallmark card on steroids. Like, I like it.
You know, not a specific location, but around everywhere.
Like
right?
Around, yes.
Yeah.
So are you just the best around here, and then he's the best around there? Yeah.
Well, that's kind of some specious logic, if you think about it, though, because, like, we're all here, and, like, we can't all be the best.
Right.
I'm among the best. I'll give you that.
Well, that's a longer.
Look, take it up with Joe.
Take a stand.
Take it up with Joe Bean Esposito. I wonder how many people that on a daily basis that when I go into my gym, not that I go into the gym every day, but when I go in there are listening to like songs like that to pump themselves up. Like I would just
getting amped up.
I would
up.
Love to know like because you know some people are in there like, you're the best. By the way, we listened to that song in the absence of a correct video. Or we listen.
I mean, I don't know. That was pretty correct.
Oh, it was correct. Sorry, like an actual like
intended
video. Yeah. Mark found that song.
It was a workout, like a pumped up montage workout scene from Rocky
from
III.
Rocky III.
Yeah, so it was the Rocky III training montage.
It was the Rocky III training montage with "You're the Best Around" on top of it. So so far tonight, I'm 2 for 2 with Rocky III.
Boy. Yeah, dude. And you didn't even anticipate there being that video for it, but I'm glad we watched that
one. I feel
one.
Like there's a Sylvester Stallone train.
Stallone vibe in the room tonight.
For me tonight.
Let's see how that plays out for you.
Okay, we'll
Ryan?
See.
Yeah, so another song that I know specifically from a soundtrack, and I would not know otherwise, is Within Your Reach by The Replacements. It doesn't sound like anything fucking else they've ever recorded, as far as I can tell. But anyway, like it was on the Say Anything soundtrack, and I don't remember at all like where it is in the film. But like, I think there's a video for it. But I genuinely love the song, and I owned that CD back in the day, and that's how I know it. So let's get into it.
I can live without so much. I can die without a clue. Sun keeps rising in the west. I keep on waiting for it comes to you. I never see no mountain. Never swam. Got me drowning. I guess it's up to me. I can live without your touch. I can live without your touch.
At the end of that movie, you know, the whole thing is that he's going overseas.
Oh,
with Diane
Ford, they're on the plane.
And he has to talk her into not freaking out when the plane is getting ready to take off. And there's this whole thing where he's holding her hand and he's talking her through like.
It's the last song in the film, right?
It's the last song in the film as the credits are getting ready to roll.
Yeah, and he's
and they
trying
never
to talk
to
her
lyrics.
Down off the ledge and, and he's going with her to England because she got like the big scholarship or whatever.
Yeah. And he's a kickboxer. And
he's a kickboxer.
Like,
Which is ties into Rocky.
Kind of, I guess kind
of. Karate Kid.
Sure.
There's loosely. There's magic
I think
in this
he,
room tonight.
Something.
They got that little cute kid that's his sister, Joan Cusack, who's actually like his for real sister.
Yeah.
And he's got that great uncle thing going on with the kid, and he's like, what do we love? And the kid goes, pain! And anyway, that's one of those movies, like, you know, just about all the stuff I've picked for tonight, like, are for movies that I can watch over and over again, and that's definitely
which
one of them.
Which kind of makes sense. Like, this is the first time we've done one of these, so you know, cream rises to the top.
I suppose that's true, unless you're Shane.
Yeah,
which everybody's got their own way that they pick the songs.
That
got different consistencies of cream, I guess.
Shane's cream has a lead balloon in it.
It's curdled.
Yeah,
Mark, right. What do you got?
All right, let's see what I got here. Yeah, I'm going to have to go with my next one is going to be Elliot Smith.
I hear he's good.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
He's decent.
He's an up-and-comer.
Yeah. Saw him last week.
I'm sorry.
you both are horrible.
So literally, I'm kind of going off the same
stuff you learned
as you. Like, these are songs that I first heard.
You got turned on to
a movie.
Yeah.
Right? So this is Needle in the Hay, and it was on Royal Tenenbaums.
Royal Tenenbaums, yeah. Oh, this is a fucking great scene in that movie.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Her hand on his arm, a stack charm around your neck, strung out and thin. Calling some friend, trying to cash some check. He's acting dumb, that's what you've come to expect. Needle in the hay, needle in the hay, needle in the hay, needle in the hay.
Any person in this room that just watched that that didn't think to themselves, I need to rewatch that movie.
Well, I did think that, but I didn't like it the first time I saw it.
I'm just talking about right now.
Right now, I was like, maybe I need to watch that again because I get like a Coen Brothers-y thing off of like half of Wes Anderson's output.
No, not that one. No, that
here
one's,
we go. It was only a matter of time before that happened.
Ryan and I share this together. We both don't like Coen Brothers.
We don't like Coen Brothers.
Yeah. That is a much. That's a.
I know it's so over the top.
I will.
But
say,
I did enjoy that clip, and I do love that song.
There are two things.
I suggest you rewatch it because the soundtrack on it is built for you.
Two things in particular that I find interesting. One is that scene that we watched.
By the way, the movie is Royal Tenenbaums.
Yeah,
the
movie
is
Royal Tenenbaums.
Anybody.
The scene that we watched with that was tied into Needle in the Hay is the scene where Bomber, the Luke Wilson character in that, who's the tennis player who's in love with his stepsister.
Adopted sister.
Yes, yeah. Right, adopted sister. Cuts all his hair, like basically shaves his beard and then cuts
his wrist.
Yeah. And so the funny thing is, it's like, and Shane mentioned this at the, like, right before the thing was playing, it was like, this is a very, like, tonally, it's very different than a Wes Anderson movie until he's on the gurney. And then it's almost a Wes Anderson movie.
Like, well, yeah, it's funny. Like, there's a funny punchline at the end of that. Well, it's just such a tonal shift from the rest of that movie. I mean, it's so. The dialogue is so crazy whimsical, but like, and it's so bizarre. There are many bizarre things, and then there's like this weird downshift thing where all of a sudden Luke Wilson's character tries to kill himself.
It's a very manic movie, I think.
There's a lot of comedy
and high points, but then like the lows are really low.
A lot of surreal, like all the Owen Wilson stuff. Mm-hmm. Like,
well, and the. Ben Stiller's character,
yeah,
is super.
Yeah,
dumb.
There's a lot of low points that I mean, it's, but that is just such a crazy, like, unexpected.
This doesn't
horror
have anything
movie.
To do necessarily with that specific song or clip, but my favorite memory from Royal Tenenbaums doesn't necessarily resonate as something that everybody would think of when they see that movie. But I saw like a behind the scenes thing, and Gene Hackman was really concerned because there was a shot in that movie where Royal, the character that he's playing, is standing directly in front of the Statue of Liberty, like blocking it out entirely. And he was like, shouldn't I move so that could get in the shot? And Wes Anderson was like, no, he's an asshole. Like, he would absolutely stand in front of, like, so no one could see the Statue of Liberty. So little stuff like that, I think, inform musical choices like this.
From what I've heard, one more. I mean, we're talking more about the movies tonight. I mean, it's a movie soundtrack show. Apparently, like, I mean, it like Gene Hackman so did not get Wes Anderson, and he was such an asshole on the set. It reminded me of Burt Reynolds and P.T. Anderson when he almost challenged him to a fist fight.
Like, oh, on Boogie Nights.
Yeah, he was literally going to fucking fight him. like in the driveway of like one of the some scene, whatever. There's scenes in movies. So
yeah, I also heard from somebody, and then this is just one more movie anecdote, but I also heard that that's sort of how Gene Hackman is on every set, that like he gets his juice from being a dick, like, and so he'll try and create like tension,
drama, so like, he can
draw from it.
Was that Gene Hackman's last movie, or did he do one after that? Because he retired from acting not long after that. He's just painting. He's been painting.
Well, I think
like painting houses.
I think he's done some stuff. Since then,
if he did, it's maybe one, maybe two pictures, not very many. What you got?
Okay, so this is not an 80s track. It's not even a 90s track. It might have been.
Is it a track?
It is a track. Yeah. So when we first started talking about when I pitched you guys on this, and you said okay, let's do it. My first thought was, I wanted to make sure that I did a track from a John Carney movie, because I didn't particularly, and this is like, this is my unpopular opinion, I think Glenn Hansard is great. I didn't love Once, like it's just overwrought for me.
There's some good songs on that.
There's some really great
songs.
But
I didn't like it either.
And seeing him and a guitar by itself at the Paramount Theater here in Austin on stage with nothing else is one of the most amazing shows I've ever seen. I just didn't like that movie.
It was
a little
cold
sad
too.
For me, and I was like, it passed.
It was just a little, it tried to be like not contrived like Hollywood old musicals, but to me, like, you know that they're going to be contrived, and this just seemed contrived.
Yeah. So anyway, but since then, you know, John Carney was in The Frames. And so he comes from a musical background, and since then he's been making movies, and he made a movie called Begin Again with Mark Ruffalo and Keira Knightley, which is definitely lighter in tone, kind of a fun. There's some darkness there too, but it's also a little bit fun. And then he totally trashed Keira Knightley on the back end of that, so he's kind of still curmudgeonly, which I think is fun. And then the next movie that he did that came out, I guess, a couple of years ago was a movie called Sing Street, which is basically an ode to like him growing up as a kid in, I guess, Ireland. And in this case, it's like there's all this sort of tumult going on at home. His parents are splitting up. He's got an older brother that's off doing his own thing. And so he gets moved from this sort of prestigious school to this like kind of public school where he's got to wear a uniform, but he doesn't have all the shit. He doesn't have, like, for instance, you have to wear black shoes, and he's only got a scruffy pair of brown shoes, and the Catholic guys who are running the school really bust his balls, as do the people that he's going to school with. At the saving grace, and I won't go through the whole film, sorry guys, the saving grace is that there's a girl across the street that he's trying to impress, and so he starts a band, and that's what the movie's about. And it's wrapped in the envelope of the 80s. So it's a movie that came out a couple of years ago that's about essentially a version of the filmmaker growing up as a kid and trying to impress a girl. And so the last song in the film is a song called Brown Shoes, and it's about, you know, conforming and like the man trying to keep you down.
Tell me what to do. You wear a dress and tell me not to wear brown shoes. You think you're man enough to wash the makeup off my face right now? But don't you know the bigger that they are, the harder they fall. And the boots on the other foot now, buckle up, we're taking you down. See your curtains falling, so take your
Brown Shoes off the Sing Street soundtrack.
Who was the artist again?
Sing Street. Sing Street is the band that they, and the name of the street that the school is on that he ends up having to go to is like an Irish spelling of
the word. Was there like a band, or is it just written like specifically for the For the movie?
Yeah, they wrote music for the movie.
Yeah.
Studio music.
Under the name
stuff,
of
yeah.
Sing Street.
It did occur to me that song sounds more like The Replacements than the Replacements song that I played earlier.
You know what it made me think
maybe
of?
Replace
like,
The Replacements.
It made me, and this is kind of fitting, cause, was that in Ireland?
Yeah.
It made me think of Ash, and they were Northern Irish,
oh,
right?
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
It had very similar, like, what time period was that supposed to be in?
80s. Like, it is full on 80s. Like, there are Smiths, Duran Duran, all sorts of various and sundry other references that are, like, real in the music that are really apparent.
Yeah, highly recommend that movie. It's
yeah.
good.
Anyway, that's Sing Street. Shane, what do you got for us?
Okay, so keeping with the fight theme, no, I'm just kidding. We're going to move into the 90s here. This is a song that I recently thought of. Right before you mentioned this, and I immediately thought of the song. It's so weird. It's from a movie from like 1995 or 6 called The Truth About Cats and Dogs. It was like Janine Garofalo's take on like movie stardom.
And who was the hot girl?
I remember nothing about the movie. Nothing.
Uma Thurman.
Yeah, I literally remember nothing about
quote,
the movie.
Air quote, doppelganger.
However, there was one song that just kills me, and that's the song I want to play. It's the Suzanne Vega song, Caramel. I think it's slinky and jazzy and sexy. However, Suzanne Vega doesn't have a very sexy singing voice, but
it's kind of plaintive.
It's kind of tuneless. But
for some reason, I don't mind.
I don't either. But this song has got this like jazzy, slinky, like it. But at the same time, it's totally mid-90s because this is right around the time where like swing dancing took off, and in the 90s for a while, it was a huge thing.
I remember
for a while.
Cherry popping daddies.
Yeah, yeah. But this doesn't sound like that.
Squirrel in the zippers.
This sounds like a smoky jazz club kind of song. But I think it's anyway. It's a great song. I hadn't thought of it in 20 years. So anyway, let's listen to Caramel by Suzanne Vega.
Won't do to dream of caramel, to think of cinnamon and long for you. It won't do to stir a deep desire, to fan a hidden fire that can never burn.
Like the hot cat lady with Betty Page bangs. Is there any wonder that
hot cat lady
that I would like this song?
You're not kidding about her voice being plaintive, though. I hadn't really thought about it that way.
Yeah,
but it
I
is.
Mean, I don't know
like,
if it's atonal. It might be a little flat,
it's
but
a
just
little
like
flat.
Tiny. It's bit, but
I
enough.
I don't mind it. It's
for
it's
it to
kind
be
of
flavor.
Her thing.
Yeah, it's like flavor rather than.
I feel like her game is her pacing, like the way that she's
a great Fraser. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, that's kind of like what there's a lot about that song that I think
she paints a picture.
It's a yes. I mean, that's kind of a low key song, but do you see what I'm saying? Like, it's kind of slinky, but like not like over the top at the same time. Like, it's
kind of sexy. And
there's
like
it's in 2/4. It's in the same beat as Bossa Nova, which is kind of a plaintive, you know.
Well, and that's kind of your sweet spot.
It is my sweet spot. Yeah.
This a thing I don't think I've brought up on the show before, but like I really enjoyed the art direction in that video.
In that video,
yeah. It's just really pretty and like these day glow colors.
It's
but,
real
but, like, a
of
lot
its
of
time
vintage.
Too. Like, but it looks good. I mean, the whole thing is good. It's a cool little. It's like 2.5 minutes, little trifle. Like you're in and you're out. The guitars sound great. Like you couldn't really hear on the version. There's this really cool bass line that goes through the whole thing and stuff like that. But song I hadn't thought of in a long time.
It's a song to throw on when you're like getting to know a woman and you're splitting a bottle of red wine.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you got it.
Yes.
You got the song.
Absolutely.
That's always, Ryan, that's always your scenario. Is like, all right, there's a girl.
He has to tie it into some sort of relationship.
Yeah. She's, you know.
But, you know, that is the time
you
for
met
that
her
song.
At a vending machine. She's got a cab running. Like, yeah. It's very specific. Like, yeah. Cool. All right. Who's next? Red?
Right on.
Yeah. I wanted to pick something off Trainspotting, which I think is an outstanding
soundtrack.
Oh,
I hear that track. Yeah.
And I had actually purchased an album by this band that I wasn't actually all that crazy about. And then when Trainspotting came out, and I don't know if, like, I got into the song, like, after I had already owned an album and kind of written them off. But, like, Pulp, Mile End, I think, is an outstanding song. And I liked it better than anything from This Is Hardcore, which is the one I owned. But
This is hard. Well, that the title track, it starts out so great and then just fucking goes off a cliff, and then the rest of the album sucks.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. It got a lot of hype, and I was like,
I never really got this band. I like
Common
People.
Well, there's some earlier stuff that I think is really good, and I'm having to go back and find it. But this one, I got immediately.
I don't remember this song.
There's a video for it. Kevin, I will warn you, there is a needle in it, but it's not an action shot. So I think you'll be all right.
Oh, thanks, man.
You're not going to faint?
Not going to faint.
You'll be fine.
We didn't have nowhere to live. We didn't have nowhere to go. Till someone said, I know this place of as if someone had died. The living room was full of flies. The kitchen sink was blocked. The bathroom sink not there at all. Ooh, it's a mess, all right. Yes, it's my end.
Great Jarvis Cocker.
Do you remember in, like, the, I think it was the 96, maybe Mercury Prize or something, some, like, British music thing.
Yeah, like you get crowned king of British music.
Well, no, not just that, but there was like a big thing, like not the BAMFAs, that's like the Oscars. Anyway, it was some like the Emmys of, or the Grammys of Britain, and Michael Jackson won an award, and Jarvis Cocker like jumped up on stage and mooned him.
No, but that's awesome. Yeah, he's kind of a famous curmudgeon. Like, apparently he didn't like being grouped in with Oasis, Blur, and Suede as like the big four of Britpop.
Brit stuff, yeah.
But whatever. Like, I dig that song like a lot, and
it's pretty good.
I only know it from Trainspotting.
I haven't seen that movie since I saw it in the theaters when it came out, but I liked it then.
I've probably seen that movie half a dozen times, and I never get tired of it.
Yeah, it seems like it. I was just thinking again, like, I should watch that again.
Yeah.
All right, Mark, what you got?
So I've noticed that we've done some Manchester soundtrack. We've done some Northern Ireland Belfast soundtrack. We've done now some Glasgow, and
yeah, we're proving our Anglophile bona fides.
Yeah, I'm gonna stick with that and a similar vein to Trainspotting too, from the movie Lock, Stock, and Smoking Barrels. I think Guy Ritchie definitely enriched my musical horizon in the late 90s. And this is Ocean Color Scene. And
I forgot about that band.
Yeah, hey. The song is 100 Mile High City. So we'll listen to that now.
What a great song.
I think I've seen that movie once, and I don't remember that song at all. But
I don't remember the song.
But it rocks.
From the movie, but yeah, what a great riff. We're like, again,
no, that
good
was
riff
just
tonight.
Fun.
Yeah, good song. Good choice, Mark. Mark here's the fucking king of like coming up with shit that like nobody would think of. Like,
well, like that's left field. That was my goal.
What was the movie that Guy Ritchie did after
Snatch?
Right, and Golden Brown from the Stranglers was on that soundtrack, and I totally
almost picked that one.
I'll pick that for next time. But like, yeah, that's how I learned that song. And yeah, dude's like, you know, like a, you know, got an ear for, you know.
Yeah,
what do they call them, like needle drops, you know, in films, like where they're supposed to be or whatever. But anyway.
Yeah. Good. It's
always,
good stuff.
Always good stuff. Good stuff. People with good soundtracks. Kevin, what you got?
Okay, so, well, so part of, just as dumb luck would have it, the guy I roomed with in college curates the Dallas Film Festival, and I was like,
James.
Yeah, so what up, James? Anyway, we were texting back and forth today, and I was like, "Oh, we're doing the podcast on soundtracks." I was like, "What are some of your favorite soundtracks?" Because I remember some of the stuff that he used to listen to when we roomed together, but I mean, that's been years. And of course, that guy sees a lot more movies than I do. Anyway, it was fascinating and a total time capsule. But he brought up something that I would not have thought of, and I think we ought to listen to it now. And it's a track off the Judgment Night soundtrack, which were all mashups between rock
metal
bands and rap bands.
Yep.
Yeah, and this is there's a track called Fallen that was that's Teenage Fan Club and De La Soul.
That's the best song on that record.
I think so too.
That sounds like an awesome idea, and I don't think I've ever heard it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Traveling at the speed. Remember when I used to be dope?
Yeah.
I own a pocket full of fame.
But look what you're doing now.
I know. Well, I know. I lost touch with reality. Now my personality is an unwanted commodity.
Can't believe
I used to be Mr. Steve Austin on the mic. 6 million ways I used to run it. I guess Oscar Goldman got mad. Cause I got loose circuits.
So loose.
I beat a mother goose with the eggs that seem to be.
De La Soul and Teenage Fan Club. The track's called Fallen off the Fallen, I-N apostrophe, off the Judgment Night soundtrack. And it was really like those, every track on that record is a collaboration between.
I think there's like Faith No More is on one. And
yeah, I mean there's a whole, and like a lot of it is more, most of it
harder.
Is angrier than that.
It's harder, yeah.
But this was probably, I thought this was the best track on that.
Yeah,
on that
my record. Friend Brandon was super into this record when I think it came out in 93, not early 94.
Something like that, yeah.
Is that a Tom Petty sample in there?
I think it might have been.
Fallen sounds exactly like from Free Fallen.
Yeah, no, I think it might have been. And it was the idea.
De La Soul, so there's some samples in there.
Right. And the idea, of course, was like, it was also like sort of right in the upward ascent, if that's what you want to call it, of the rap rock thing. And so like that, it was anyway, that was one of the deals where the soundtrack really made waves and the movie, not as much, but anyway, yeah. So shout out to my buddy, James Dallas, for suggesting.
He's good folks.
Faust.
Yeah. For suggesting some Judgment Night.
We watched Texas Tech beat OU in a gay bar with, that gentleman.
That's true. Once upon a time.
Gay bar.
Yes.
Anyway, yeah, good stuff all the way around. And so we're going to do one more round of these. What do you got, Shane?
Okay, so I'm just going to say three things. Three important, amazing things about this last video. Number one, Sylvester Stallone.
Recurring motif.
Number two, Sammy Hagar dancing and playing guitar in his bare feet. And number three,
you might be doing it wrong.
It's the theme. Yeah, possibly. It's the theme song of what I consider to be the greatest concept for an action movies of the 80s. And that's The name of the movie is Over the Top, and it's a movie.
Oh, arm wrestling, what?
Arm wrestling thing.
Arm wrestling.
Yeah.
Never done before. Never done since. Why was it done? I don't know. But Sylvester.
There was a Molly Ringwald movie called PK and the Kid that was also about arm wrestling.
Okay, well, I guess it's around been done the same since, time. But I doubt it. I doubt it's of similar ilk. So anyway, the name of the song is "Winner Takes It All." It's an amazing video. It's an amazing song. And
who's the artist?
Sammy Hagar. He dances in his bare feet while he plays guitar.
Well, I didn't know if it was a Van Halen thing or something.
Oh no, no. It's I think it's pre Hagar Van Halen, or it overlaps in the very beginning. So,
all right. Well, let's get into it.
Yeah.
Theme tonight, man.
I know.
Like Sammy Hagar should have toured with what's his name that did
Joe Bean.
Yes.
Esposito.
Yes. Yeah, they'll all just be like fist pumping anthems.
You know, there's just nothing not wonderful about that video, like Sammy Hagar in his bare feet, and then also like riding a motorcycle, kicking like while he's riding the motorcycle down like some strip or drag or something in Las Vegas. So
there's a lot of shit that doesn't make sense in that video.
Are you familiar with the Strongest Man competition?
Oh yeah, where they throw kegs and shit.
Yes. And I watched it this one time, and one of the competitions was like head-to-head arm wrestling, obviously, but like it was Strongest Man against Strongest Man.
Is there back-to-back arm wrestling?
Maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
But the point is that these two guys were so strong that they're arm wrestling and one of the dude's arms literally snaps in half.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Did you see how skinny... See, like, the joke at the end of that video was Sammy Hagar and Sylvester Stallone met and arm wrestled and Sammy Hagar won? No.
No.
Not at that point, at least. But
he was so
little bitty that may have happened. I mean, had they actually armed
Sammy Hagar always cracked me up that his biggest solo hit was about speeding.
Mm-hmm. I did just for grins, try to find Over the Top in the Roger Ebert website, see if he reviewed it. There's no... He just passed that one by. That did not...
That's too bad.
Competitive arm wrestling, not of interest to the little...
Yeah, I'm not surprised. What you got, Ryan?
Donnie Darko has a surprisingly good soundtrack.
It does. It really does.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And there's a song from a band that I kind of semi-liked a little bit in the 80s, but they were always like one of the lesser lights of their genre. But it's Tears for Fears, and it's Mad World. And there's a cover of it also on the soundtrack.
Yeah, the cover's really great, too.
I think the cover was actually a bigger hit than the first one.
I think
one.
It was.
The
Tears for Fears version was a big hit in the UK in 83 when it was initially released. But anyway, that's how I learned the song is from Donnie Darko. So I actually prefer the Tears for Fears version, and I think it's better than most of the rest of the stuff in their catalog. So let's get into it. All around me are familiar faces, worn out places, worn out faces, frightened and dead. Thank you. 1983 and resurrected in 2004. Donnie Darko came
out. Oh, no, yeah. Like, no, way before 2004, man, like 2000, 2001.
You could be right.
Yeah.
Maybe I just saw it on DVD at that point. But anyway, apparently.
I said it like way before, like 3 years before.
2001.
Like, 2001. All right.
Oh, 3 years before.
Yeah, but I'd never seen that video before. Right. And apparently, like a Thompson twin, like, wandered onto the set and, like, danced on a deck.
that's the best part. There's many good things about that video, but the interpretive dancer on the side, like.
Yeah, well, we got homeboy, like, staring out the window.
I think both of them were.
Contemplatively.
I think there were two different.
I think there are two main dudes in Tears for Fears.
Yeah, but I think both of them were.
And the other guy wrote it, but Roland sang it.
But I think that there. I could be wrong about this, but it looked.
I think you're right.
I think that the other guy,
the
blonde guy, was.
They both did their own little bit of interpretive.
Yeah, yeah. Could be wrong, but Mark thinks I'm right. So
it looked like to me.
Eat it, nerd.
The way that they shot the main part of that video is right. Like, there's one guy standing inside who's got. His hands, you know, like a furtive glance on his face. His hands are up against the window. And the dance the other guy is doing outside in the distance looks like if he was inside, the dance would actually clean the glass. So I thought, like, one guy's just messing it up and the other guy is outside.
Well, I'm just amazed that he wasn't, like, distracted by the guy off to his left, you know, out of his periphery vision,
just
doing this weird.
Just nothing going on out here.
The dude at the window just reminded me of Cats because, like, you know, windows are like their television. You know, they just will, like, sit there and just be fascinated. Because he was glued to that window.
He was glued.
And he wasn't looking in the direction of the interpretive dancer.
No, he was like, he had his hands like a pantomime artist, like, on the window. Mark, what you got?
I'm going to go back to my.
Got to get back in time. That's
my,
a soundtrack
my
song.
My deep youth. That is a good soundtrack song. And a band that we don't really get to cover very much just because of the nature of this podcast. And a movie that I think at one point in my youth I was actually afraid of. But the movie is Yellow Submarine. And the band is the Beatles.
Oh, I've heard of them.
Yeah.
And the
That's
song.
That's a smart pick.
The song I want to pick off of Yellow Submarine is Hey Bulldog.
It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, so let's listen to that.
They produce so much material.
Yeah, and we were, like, discussing it here. So this was, I think, kind of premiered on Yellow Submarine, but the rest of the
I
album.
I just know that song, and I've never seen that movie. I don't think I've ever listened to the soundtrack from that movie.
Well, there's a lot of other songs on that soundtrack that were featured on other albums prior to the movie coming out. So.
Interesting anecdote about that video. So we watched footage of when they were actually recording that song in the studio. And the way that footage got unearthed, I remember this from several years ago, was that there was a 2020 story that happened years after the fact, 20, 30 or more years after the fact. And
the ABC News magazine show 2020?
Yep, the ABC. Yeah. And so it was like there was a story that was done on that on the Beatles, but there was no music behind that footage, and somebody, of course, on the internet went and married up the footage that was on in that show and like basically created a music video, and now those exist. So in
that's
a sense,
cool.
It's crazy. Like yeah, in a sense, it's like sort of like the first music video.
Well, it's footage of them in the studio, you know, playing the song or whatever. But I just love it that Ringo has a tie on for some reason.
Right.
Like they're in the studio. They're not.
They were proper gentlemen.
Apparently.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I love that song.
John Lennon's
so much.
Sideburns were definitely proper.
Oh, yeah. Those were mutton chops. Rapa. Actually.
Kevin.
Okay. So
you're
going
to drop
the Kevin.
Mic on this?
I'm not. Well, not that hard. one of the soundtracks that I kind of kept coming back to, and there are like one of the things that we've talked about a lot when we have been in between takes is just that there's so much material. So, but there are a few soundtracks in particular that it seems like super obvious. And one of them that was known when it came out that was known as much for the soundtrack as it was for the movie itself was Garden State. And so I picked a non-obvious.
Not the Shins.
No, it's not the Shins. There's a great Nick Drake track on this record that I really like that's been covered a bunch, but it's not one that I was as familiar with as, like, say, the Pink Moon stuff, called One of These Things First. And it's a travel, essentially in the film, it's like a travel sequence, but I feel like a lot of his music sort of lends itself to that. I doubt that there is a proper video, but
we
let's
will
dial
find
it
out.
I could have been a sailor, could have been a cook. A real life lover, could have been a book. I could have been a signpost, could have been a clock. As simple as a kettle, steady as a rock. I could be here and now. I would be, I should be, but how? I could have been but one of these things first. It's a gorgeous track, and one of the things that Shane and I were talking about while that song was playing is about how, like, I'm guilty of it too. Like, I fall out of Nick Drake falls out of my rotation, and then I hear a song like that, and I'm like, I really should make an more.
Every time I hear that, I'm always like, fuck, why am I not listening to this shit like every day?
And
like,
I remember in that movie, that song is used like essentially like as kind of a transition character growth type. Like, there's no dialogue around when it happens, and it really sort of sets that tone. And, of course, this the soundtrack for this record was, for the Garden State soundtrack, was all apparently what Zach Braff was listening to while he wrote the screenplay. So, anyway.
Which makes sense.
It's a cool tune. I just don't really know a whole lot of Nick Drake, and I know I've heard that song before, and it's good, but it kind of struck me as like a more jazzy Bell and Sebastian.
Well, that's the thing about that record.
Who
in
were
particular.
Children?
It's a
time?
Little more jazzy instrumentation. If you go back to some of his stuff, like, I actually think like every one of his three albums are fucking great.
He's dead, right? Like,
oh,
he
yeah,
is
yeah,
long,
he,
dead.
He,
long
he,
dead, like yeah. 70s,
long,
right?
Long dead, yeah, yeah, like 71 or something.
Yeah,
well, but
this was released in 72.
There's a whole like the last record he put out, Pink Moon, is just like. Fucking crazy apocryphal.
That's one of the ones.
I mean, not apocryphal, apocalyptical.
Yeah, like, I you probably know it all the way through, so maybe we couldn't pick it. But that would be like sort of the, like, when we started this show is like, hey, I need to catch up with stuff that I've heard about my whole life and like never actually listened to. I've never listened to Pink
Moon. Got a greatest hits record that really is. I mean, he never had any hits, but it's a really
best
good
of.
It's a best
what they,
of. Right.
It's what
a,
they call it when
right,
you
yeah,
didn't
yeah.
have any hits.
It's a great collection of songs, and it's a great place to start. But, yeah, highly recommended.
And another one of those artists that influenced a lot of other artists, obviously.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, it was cool to see you dudes. Nice to get back in the saddle.
Yeah. Welcome back, everybody.
Yeah.
Welcome back to our listeners. We appreciate you sticking with us. We know it's been a little bit of a hiatus there, but Glad to be back.
Well, we're back. We have equipment. So we'll be back to our regularly scheduled programming soon. So stick around. Just keep watching your screen constantly between now and the next time that we put something up.
Yes, refresh constantly, looking for new content.
Just sit there waiting. That's like a like a shitty Black Mirror episode or something.
Kind of, probably. Or
like Bandersnatch,
my life, maybe. Who knows?
Well, I haven't seen it.
Okay, well, until next go around, I'm Kevin.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Shane.
And I'm Mark.
This is Somebody Likes It.